One is the issue I was bringing up this morning that I mentioned is under the research there, and if you look under that, the Yellowtail survey document, the peer review, which is behind tab 8, and I think the page was... I lost the damn page. Page 7. The first bullet that's listed there says the peer reviewers, I mean, you can read it, and I have a motion to that effect. And that the Groundfish Committee, PDT, analyzed the effect, the hell would I didn't even try that word, of the Nantucket Lightship closed area with respect to its original objectives,
Is there a second? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Discussion? David?
Yeah, Phil, do you want to add the second part of that about the survey database is considered useful to identify alternate closed areas? In other words, I think what you're suggesting is that this closed area isn't appropriate as configured and that it should be reconfigured.
I would assume that I kind of figured that I didn't want to really guide them in any direction, Dave. They need to analyze how it's being done and what should be done. And then I would assume it'd take a council action. The council can take it after that. I'd just like to get the analysis started to look at it.
Okay.
Tom.
Yeah, I guess I'm in principle oppose any of these ad hoc requests to do analysis of things because they chew up PDT time, and as we pointed out in a PDT report dated in January, the council is considering a number of management alternatives so far where the PDT isn't even sure how we're going to analyze them. And, PDT members are actively working trying to figure that out. So when you make requests like this, it diverts the PDT from focusing on complete Amendment 16 development. Having said that, if the council is going to develop a Days at Sea alternative for Amendment 13, which it's unclear right now if you are or not because you haven't made that decision, then certainly looking at the closed areas may be appropriate and what contributions they may make. But I would prefer to defer anything like this until we know for sure whether the council is actually developing a Days at Sea alternative. I would hate to spend time working on analysis of the efficacy of the lightship closed areas if it turns out that the council goes to some sort of output control system and decides they don't need the closed area at all as a management control. Why spend time doing it unless you're certain you're going to consider some form of a closed area as a mortality control?
Yeah, my suggestion is that this is a worthwhile endeavor, but it may be premature. Phil?
I need to bring it up on the table anyhow. So I have, if you want to take the PDT, that probably wasn't the correct word. And I would actually just refer it to the Groundfish Committee and see where they would want to go.
So you'd like to, in a sense, put it in the queue for the Groundfish Committee to address when they
get to it? Yeah, I'd like to see them talk about it, and then, if... As Tom said, it is part of 13, I think, if we go down that road. But I do want to highlight it that we need to start looking at it. That we've been waiting. My thought train is we've been waiting quite a while for this report to come out to get done to have something to look at.
And you'd probably want to change the word analyze to consider?
Yeah.
Okay. How does the seconder feel about that? Feeling good? Okay. John Nelson.
It probably just needs a little bit more verbiage on there, and I think Tom had mentioned considering this, if indeed there there is going to be closed areas considered for mortality control. So I think if we add that on there, that gives it as a tool to the Groundfish Committee, which I think is the intent. But it also doesn't have a direction to the Groundfish Committee to stop doing what they're doing and start analyzing this. If they if they're going to do it for consideration of other closed areas, then fine. It's readily available to them. So I would suggest consider the objective in if the Groundfish Committee is evaluating closed areas for mortality control. That again is a very friendly amendment.
Phil?
I'm digesting that, but I'm not sure. Maybe somebody could refresh me. I'm not sure that the light shift's objectives was mortality control. I think it was much more, it was partially that, but it was much more spawner. If I remember right, maybe somebody in the center of it.
Well, it still addresses what you asked for, but it has them to consider if they're going to use that for mortality control.
Tom. Yeah, I'm a little fuzzy on the history, but Phil's right, I think. Originally, the original design of the light ship was in part to protect juvenile yellowtail. But I think just prior to Amendment 5 being adopted, it was expanded to year-round to be a mortality closure. There's also, of course, areas in the light ship area now which are closed to mobile gear to protect habitat. Not the entire area, but a big chunk of it. So there, I'd have to go back and dig through it, but there was a time anyway where it was also to protect juvenile yellowtail when there were big year classes coming through. Rodney, did Tom say what you were going to say?
Tom is exactly right. That's how it happened. That's exactly right. it was a juvenile protection area. That's how it started, and then it turned into this. But I have a question of Tom. If this is reverted to the Groundfish Committee, we're going to need some guidance for the PDT. Is that still going to deter you from what you're doing?
Well, it might be easier to work out the details about when with the Groundfish Committee rather than with the council. I mean, back in Amendment 13, there was one alternative at one stage of development that suggested changes to the lightship closed area, lopping off the western part of it. So there is at least some more recent history that suggests that the lightship, even before this survey, that suggests the lightship closed area really is not being an effective, not providing effective protection to yellowtail.
Okay. Any more discussion? All right. Richie?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question, or maybe someone can help me out with this lightship area. Of course, it was closed for the juvenile yellowtail, but my thought process is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that if it's closed for yellowtail, and yellowtail are bottom fish or on the bottom of the ocean, and they're in sand, and that lightship area is deep with scallops, what happens to the yellowtails? Where do they go in between the scallops? If there's no, I don't understand how one fishery is affecting another. Obviously, if there's a lot of scallops in there, the yellowtails are having a hard time to exist. Is there anything, any studies done, anything out there that can take my mental mind off this issue? Thanks.
Rodney?
Yeah, to Richie's point, there are lightship scallops in the lightship area, but it's up only in the northeast corner, and there was never very many yellowtails. There are yellowtails there, but the heart of the yellowtails was more towards the middle or the southern of the lightship. They're up around, when they're talking the lightship, it's up around Asia Rip, just south of Asia Rip. That's where they're catching the scallops.
Okay. Okay. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. One abstention. Motion carries 16-0, one abstention. Anything else? Sally? We'll play ping pong, though.
Yeah, I have a motion. In response to a couple of comments that were made during the open comment period, and that is that the council communicate with members of Congress that Magnuson-Stevens reauthorization has increased demands for management action in the region, including the need for improved technology for monitoring catch and landings. Well, we're not allowed to say, therefore, give us money. This is strictly education, not lobbying. I understand that fine line that we have to walk here. And, yes, it is dot, 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 but, you know. I understand that, but I also understand that it's... Well, maybe I'd look to Paul to clarify what kind of communication the council has had in the past, because certainly...
Paul. What I've done in the past sometimes where it's questionable is send a letter to Bill and copy the congressional delegation and say that, you know, that we support a national program of funding to do these things and anything we can do to help you, Bill, get the funding, and then copy the congressional delegation and serves the same purpose. But, you know, it's been questionable sometimes what we can do and can't do with the lobby.
Is there a second for this motion? Are you seconding it, or I want a second before we continue the discussion. Now that we have the motion and seconded in this, as it currently stands, I'm going to rule it out of order.
Well, I'd like to, if I could, just take the suggestion that Paul had and have the communication go directly to the National Marine Fisheries Service. I think that it's important that this region not remain silent on the major changes that were made in the Magnuson Act and how those are going to impact the region. And I think if we do remain silent, then, you know, there's going to be an assumption that all is well and that we're, you know, going to be able to comply with some of these changes in creating annual catch limits and associated measures for all the management plans that don't have them right now. And that's a big deal. And I think we'd be remiss not to say right out of the gate, this is something that the resources, well, I'm trying to walk that line, but that these changes are going to result in management actions necessary by the council and changes in what the agency is doing to support those changes, especially in terms of monitoring catch and landings, so that we know that we're actually in compliance with the catch limits that we're going to have to develop for, especially for groundfish and the scallop fisheries.
Can I ask you, are you modifying the motion that, as Paul suggested?
Yeah. So we communicate with National Marine Fisheries Service.
Paul.
I've already sent this is a good idea. I think I should deal directly with Bill, but I sent Pat and communicated with Pat what I feel we need in this region to meet the MSA outside of
and have communicated with her about what she needs to do it too. And she's, I'm sure, working on things for Bill, but we're going to address it in New Orleans. But I think this is a good idea, and I'll just take what I've given Pat to address our management needs, which is considerable.
Does that say what you wanted to say, Sal? Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'm going to call the question on it. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. Phil.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Rip. next issue I got is, I'm not sure exactly which path to take with it, but I just want to put it out there, that in 42, there's a provision where in the Gulf of Maine you can land over your cod limit, run your, the cod running clock, I guess is what you call it, for landing codfish. Above your limit, you can run a next day's limit and run your clock. We don't have it in southern New England. For some reason, it was never carried into the southern New England area for that. And what's happened this winter is we're having a few codfish in southern New England, and we're running into a discard problem because they have a regulatory discard because we don't have that, and the day boat fishery is catching a few codfish. So I don't know what kind of answer. I spoke with the service a couple times about it, and I don't know what the answer to it is. I thought I was going to find out real quick, but that didn't work. I want to put it out there. I don't know what can be done or how to go about it, but it is a problem, and it really needs to be addressed. It's not huge, but at this stage in the game, if we got a regulatory discard that shouldn't be happening, we need to see about adjusting it.
I saw Tom jump out of his chair, so he may have some comments.
Yeah, I just want people to be clear. The modified running clock in the Gulf of Maine, I mean, the running clock in the Gulf of Maine doesn't allow you to just, you know, catch as much cod as you want and run the clock until you meet it. I think the modified running clock in the Gulf of Maine only applies, I have trouble keeping track of it, it only applies to the second day. You have to be over, you have to be underway, for example, for 25 hours to earn the second day's trip limit, and then you have to run your clock to the end of the 48-hour period. I believe that same provision is in place on Georgia's Bank, but maybe Sue can address that one, which is the stock area for cod in southern New England. There isn't a running clock in place now that allows you to go longer than that, either in the Gulf of Maine or on Georgia's Bank. And the modified running clock, I think, applies in both the Georgia's Bank and Gulf of Maine cod stock areas.
Well, that was kind of like the question I asked, and from what I found out so far, it wasn't interpreted to apply to southern New England.
Well, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just the Georgia's Bank regulated mesh area?
Yeah, I'm not sure how it comes out, but we're under the opinion you're not allowed to land that second day, and it's the first time we've had codfish down here in 20 years, and nobody really expected them to show up, but they are showing up fairly well.
But, I mean, just to be clear, you don't get that second day unless you're underway more than 24
right.
hours.
But we don't have that capability, from my understanding. That's what we're asking about.
Pat?
Well, we're confused because we're under the impression that this is in all areas.
Yeah, it is.
That it's not restricted to the Gulf of Maine or the Gulf of Maine regulated mesh area.
Yeah, I read it.
It is everywhere.
My interpretation, with some back and forth, was nobody was real clear. from what my understanding was, Pat, and I just want to need to find out if and where it is.
Well, it's just looking at it quickly, we're pretty sure it's everywhere. If that changes, we'll certainly get in touch with you and notify the council.
Okay, let's move on to skates. I'm sorry, Jim Salisbury.
Before we go to skates, I'd like to address one of the issues that was raised in the public comment period by Associated Fisheries in Maine regarding the monkfish interim action that was taken. And specifically, there was a letter that's in our binder of April 4th from the Monkfish Defense Fund and Associated Fisheries of Maine to the regional administrator with a variety of comments and issues that I take to be fairly significant. And I would like to make a motion that the council ask the regional administrator to respond to the council. Not only, I assume that the RA will respond to the letter in due course, but I think the issues are important that they should respond to the council as well, explaining why the action is justified and specifically to the comments raised in that letter. I think I'm not clear on all the reasons why the interim action was necessary, but it appears to me that with the council putting forth the framework and the time frame that's going to take effect, I find it very difficult to understand why an interim action delays that implementation and then proposes some other measure. So I think we need a response directly to the council for that. And those issues are all raised in that letter, so I would request the motion would be to ask the regional administrator to respond to the council. And I don't think we need it. That's RA's problem to respond to the Associated Fisheries of Maine, but respond to the council explaining why the action was taken and let's see how to say this. Explaining to the council, answering the issues that were raised in the letter of the Associated Fisheries of Maine, and explaining to the council why the interim action was taken.
What was the last part of that, Jim? Is it up
and
there?
Specifically the comments raised in the letter from the Associated Fisheries of Maine and the Monkfish Defense Fund, letter of April 4th, 2007. And the reason I reference that is because the letter...
Let's get a second. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mike Leary. Thank you.
The letter provides in some detail issues with why the interim action... I believe it explains, it raises issues why that action should not be taken. And I think it well expresses the issues that the council needs to have answered as well. So,
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I thought we were going to address this issue under other business. Now we're doing it before lunch, so it puts me at a bit of a disadvantage. I had a motion prepared to offer up under other business that would be specific to this concern about monkfish. And it's a concern that I have personally regarding, you know, what has happened with the framework for what's been proposed in the Federal Register. We have a motion on the floor now, but I have a motion that I would like to make now as a substitute motion, if you care to entertain it now. So if you would, Karen, put that motion up on the screen. And this motion is more to the point. Well, some will say it's not to the point because it's lengthy, but Not that Joe wasn't to the point, but this isn't a motion that's specific to what well, it's a motion that addresses my specific concerns, which I think should also be council concerns, and it also addresses many of the comments that have been made to me and to others about, you know, what has happened. So I would move as a substitute that the council express to Dr. Hogarth our, number one, strong objection to the National Marine Fisheries Service decision to circumvent the council process by, A, delaying implementation of the New England and Mid-Atlantic Council's Monkfish FMP Framework 4, supported by NEPA and MSA documentation, developed with the assistance of NMFS's regional office, and B, using secretarial interim rulemaking to propose interim options not supported by either council and that replace the council's framework for analytically supported management measures. Two, our concern that NMFS has failed in the proposed rule to demonstrate that either an emergency exists or overfishing is occurring. And then three, our position that the National Marine Fisheries Service implement Framework 4 as approved by both councils, and NMFS should not reject Framework 4's allowance for vessels to use carryover days at sea, an action not described or proposed in the March Federal Register. So that is a lengthy but comprehensive motion regarding monkfish.
Is there a second on the motion of substitute?
Second.
Seconded by? Who wants it? Phil. Phil, roll. I'll only say, David, that I'm glad we don't pay Karen by the keystroke. But discussion on the motion to substitute. Mike Leary.
Question for the service, please. The carryover days, I've never seen it. The prohibition on the carryover days in both the north and the south area in the emergency action. I've never seen that in writing. Is that, in fact, true?
We are considering not allowing carryover days. That is in the, at least the preamble to the rule. And the reason is that, as I mentioned earlier, we're already well over in the southern area on the tack for 2006. And we believe that one of the reasons for that is because of the carryover days from 2005. Made the measures in 2006 ineffective. When you've only got 12 days at sea, carrying over 10 days at sea doesn't make a lot of sense. The northern area, we're looking at that in addition. We haven't made a decision either way, but we're, frankly, it's a little bit hard in south, especially to argue that the 12 days is going to be effective when it wasn't this year. Well, a couple of things. First off, the comment period on the framework is still open, and the comment period is open through April 19th. So it's a little bit awkward. I think if you sent something now, it would probably be considered a comment on the framework action, which is perfectly appropriate, but I just want you to know it would be treated that way. And so the same thing with the Associated Fisheries and Maine letter. Those were submitted as comments. So we won't be responding directly to the letter individually. We'll be responding in the final actions, either the interim and or framework, to the issues raised in the letters.
Jim.
Thank you. I mean, that's why I was trying to say it's not really our concern how you respond to that as a comment. You respond to it sort of generically, I'm sure, the issues you respond to. But I think it's important that these issues, I consider this a friendly amendment and as Dave said, more to the point. It gets at the specific issues that I was concerned about. So I think we need this to be... this is our expression, and maybe it's wise for that letter to go out after the comment period ends so that it is something that needs a direct response. I'm sure it'll be also treated as a valid comment as well, but I'll leave that to the chair. Thank you.
Any other comments? All right. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 10 opposed. 3 abstentions. 1. Motion carries 10 to 3. I'm assuming, Pat, you're abstaining. 10 to 3. Voting no. 10 to 4. 10 to 3, 1 abstention. Pat.
I'm not sure what I said earlier. The comment period on the framework is still open. The comment period on the interim action has closed. I just want to be clear.
Anything else? Otherwise, I plan to move into Skates. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.